This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Khoo Soo Chuang and Tan Chun Lee. It's Friday, the 22nd of April. Looks like a lovely morning is shaping up. The sun's rising here in Taman Tun Dr. Ismail. We're turning our attention to other economies within the region, particularly Japan. Yesterday, the Japanese government upgraded its view for the economy for the first time this year amid falling COVID infections and the lifting of restrictions. Although the government boosted its assessment on consumption and public spending as the pandemic impact eases, there are several other headwinds that could stymie Japan's growth.
Russia's war on Ukraine, surging energy prices, and the sudden weakening of the yen are clouding the outlook for businesses and have the potential to weigh on consumer spending. So the Bank of Japan has also chosen to buck the trend by maintaining a loose monetary policy, even as the Fed and the other central banks are raising interest rates for the first time since the pandemic outbreak to combat soaring inflation.
Now, Japan's economy has long mystified observers for its persistent low inflation despite low interest rates. So how are these factors all playing out in a post-pandemic environment? Joining us for some thoughts on where the Japanese economy is headed is Daniel Moss, columnist with Bloomberg Opinion. Daniel, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, while other central banks are hiking interest rates this year, the Bank of Japan monetary policy is expected to remain dovish. How would you explain the BOJ's contrarian stance?
Japan wants inflation. For the first time in at least a generation, Japanese people are discovering a thing called inflation. And while inflation is on its way up in Japan, it is nowhere near the levels, the troubling levels that exist in the US, the Eurozone, many parts of Western Europe, and say Australia and New Zealand. So we have a different beast. It's been an objective of Japanese policy ever since the property crash, going right the way back to 1990, to just A, prevent deflation, B, try to get a bit of inflation. Now, the decline in the yen and the high energy prices that followed Russia's invasion of the Ukraine help get Japan there. Why stop now?
Yeah, and Daniel, the thing is, the yen has crashed on an almost daily basis against the dollar. I think there was a stretch that it fell 13 straight days, which has never been seen before in history. It just goes to indicate that the Bank of Japan's very, very easy monetary policy continues untrammeled, but that has worrying levels on its currency. How do you explain this dichotomy, and what are the ramifications of that?
Well, firstly, just to put the yen's decline into context, yes, it was down for 13 days. Not all of those days were a crash. And the yen is still significantly stronger than it was in 1998 when the US and Japan launched massive joint intervention to get the yen up off the floor. So in the historical context, we've still got a ways to go. Now, while the Bank of Japan says, you know what, this weekend's great, it's got plenty of benefits for us, the political class is starting to get a little bit twitchy. They are the ones that are going to feel the brunt of voter unhappiness about rising prices. So we need to just watch for a little bit of daylight there between the Bank of Japan, which runs interest rates, and the Ministry of Finance that's responsible for the currency. Right now, there's not too much dissonance, but you are starting to see, you know, just a little few cracks in the unified front there.
And you were mentioning about inflation that's very welcome in Japan, but I also wonder, why has inflation in Japan stayed low for so long, and what have been the consequences of all of this?
So a massive property crash around 1990, three decades ago, sucked a lot of animal spirits out of the Japanese economy. The lowflation that we saw in the United States and the UK and Western Europe after the housing crash in 2008, well, that happened much earlier in Japan. But Japan didn't take the same kind of aggressive action that was taken by places in 2008. So Japan got kind of stuck in this mire. What we're talking about is there are huge parts of the country where there's just no demand for anything because the population is declining so rapidly and more towns and communities are becoming what we might call rust belts. And people are abandoning houses rather than selling them. So look, this is not an inflationary spiral we're seeing here, but in the context of the last three decades, yeah, this is a notable moment.
And Daniel, you were mentioning about the kind of pain points that that will be seen with the falling of the yen. I mean, a fall in the value of currency is typically seen as favorable by export-dependent economies like Japan. But why is yen weakness a problem for Japan's economy?
It does exaggerate the trends toward higher inflation in Japan. Now, again, I mean, official opinion is by no means condemning this across the board. So that's a good thing. The other thing is, you know what, look, no politician likes to wake up and see the newspapers every morning, you know, currency slide, currency shock. You know, I lived in Malaysia in the late 1990s, and when Mahathir was prime minister the first time, he didn't like all the headlines about the ringgit crash. So some things are universal.
Daniel, do you think the Bank of Japan is trapped because of the huge amount of sovereign debt that has got issued? It can't raise rates because that's going to kill the economy?
This is probably overstated. The biggest holder of Japanese debt actually is the Bank of Japan itself. So that's because of years and years and years and years and years of quantitative easing. I mean, Japan was pioneering quantitative easing before anyone in the West ever heard of it. I suspect that's an overstated problem. The biggest bondholder they'd have to worry about is actually themselves.
And what is the likelihood of government intervention to prop up the yen? I mean, Japan has more than 1.3 trillion US dollar in foreign reserve, foreign exchange reserves.
I would say, famous last words, guys. I would say the likelihood of imminent intervention to strengthen the yen, we're probably not there yet. So there are gradations of comments that Ministry of Finance officials make from, yeah, we're monitoring the currency, to this is just unnatural. These moves are just erratic. They are harmful. It's just, you know, these evil speculators. You know, we're not at that point yet. The other thing I would say is, while Japan had for a long time a history of intervening in markets regarding the yen, it was often to weaken the yen, but less experience strengthening the yen.
And Daniel, can I ask, what options do you see the government taking to improve growth conditions amid the current economic environment? I think there were talks that we're going to see another stimulus package from them. What are you looking out for?
Oh, sure. Look, you know, another month, another stimulus package in Japan. Kishida, the new prime minister, has made it clear he wants a sort of a touchy-feelier, more friendly type of capitalism. But he really hasn't put a lot of meat on the bones of that idea. We're also heading toward an upper house election in Japan, and politicians of all stripes in all countries never want to leave that to chance, right? Bit of stimulus? Sure, why not?
Daniel, thanks very much for speaking to us. That was Daniel Moss, columnist at Bloomberg Opinion, talking to us about the curiosities of the Japanese economy, the fact that it's had such low inflation for a long time, so much so that the Bank of Japan is targeting high inflation, which is why they are not increasing their interest rates while the rest of the world is.
Well, they can't, right? And Japan's debt to GDP ratio forecast for 2023 is 253%, 251%, mind you. They've had low interest rates or zero interest rates for the last at least 30 years. And if you look at it, the Fed is no different. I think before the financial crisis in 2008, the value of debt on the Fed's balance sheet was about $900 billion. Today is $9 trillion. And they can't find buyers for the debt that they need to offload. So this is the reason why fiat currency is heading towards a death knell, because they're just printing it to oblivion. And eventually, there'll be no value.
Yes, and I can't help but wonder, is intervention at this stage or even at all is a good idea at all? Because fundamentally, the economic fundamentals are the one that is causing the problem here. And if you were to do an intervention, a foreign reserve or in whatever measure, it will just be a short term.
Well, Daniel did mention that he doesn't think there's a likelihood of the government intervening at this stage just yet. But he did mention that the government may issue a stimulus package in the coming months or so, especially as they head to parliamentary elections later this year. So, of course, whenever political considerations are involved, that's when the government likes to, you know, spend the cash.
Yeah, and also the reserve that they have, which is about 1.3, 1.4 trillion right now, it's usually reserved to protect a more catastrophic or a major financial shock rather than to use it on this kind of instance, in my opinion.
Yeah, to protect the currency. But I think this is why the crypto world is going gangbusters, because people just see the futility of holding paper. And, you know, the reason why central banks can continue to do so, just keep printing more.
All right, stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.